Hello and welcome to The Autograph with me, Susan Madaris. My guest this week is documentary filmmaker and activist Lara Lee. She's joining me to talk about her new film, Culture of Resistance. But first, May 31st marks the one-year anniversary of the attack on the Gaza Freedom Flotilla in international waters by Israeli troops. Lara Lee was on that ship and she managed to smuggle out 1 hour of footage of what really happened on that May morning. She's going to talk about her experience 1 year on. Join us. Almost 1 year ago, on May 31st, 2010, Israeli commandos boarding from sea and air attacked the 6 boats of the Gaza Freedom Flotilla as it attempts to bring humanitarian relief to the Palestinians of the Gaza Strip. The effort was organized by the Turkish NGO IHH and many other civil society organizations and was set to deliver a load of 10,000 tons of humanitarian aid to Gaza and to protest against the blockade imposed by Israel and Egypt at that time on the territory. However, within minutes, 9 peace activists are dead, scores of others injured. The 700 people on board the ships are arrested, transferred to Israel, and then deported. Filmmaker and activist Lara Lee was one of the few Americans on the Mavi Marmara ship. Her equipment was confiscated, but despite heavy Israeli security, she managed to smuggle out an hour's worth of raw footage. In the months that followed, the footage would be one of the few raw testimonial accounts of what really happened in the early hours of that May morning.
Okay, I'm gonna do it fantastic. You did fantastic. Okay. Some of this for give me the onion. No, give me the onion.
When we were on the Gaza Freedom Flotilla ship, we knew that we were going to have some sort of confrontation. We just didn't expect it to be so violent, you know. And in fact, when they started approaching, I told my cameraman, listen, they're going to confiscate everything, so let's switch to small SD cards because, you know, they're going to take our cameras and everything. I could tell. And that's basically how we managed to smuggle the footage out, you know, by hiding it behind the underwear. And we were the only ones who managed because everybody else was filming and taking photographs, but they had a plan. The Israeli knew that the first thing to do when you are in the middle of international waters is to cut your satellite system so nobody can tell what's going on. And they do their massacre, and they basically kidnapped us, you know, from international waters, put us in jail, and we were incommunicado. We had no access to embassies or family. You know, nobody knew what was going on with us for a few days. And then during this time, they cranked the propaganda, you know, their version of the story.
Right. So basically, they used footage obtained by the people on the ship to have a storyline of their own.
Yeah, it's amazing. They had the audacity. Not only did they confiscate our equipment and media, they excerpted the things that were conveniently good for their stories, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's why they were so upset at us, because we managed to show raw as it was, you know.
Yeah.
And we didn't hide anything. We see the guys, you know, taking the chairs and whatever they can get hold of, you know, to defend themselves. You know, according to the international law, you have the rights to defend yourself, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's makeshift, you know, like weapons, makeshift weapons, in the sense that it's not a weapon, it's like chairs and poles.
Yeah, it's a means of defense, you're saying. What about your comment? You were quoted as saying that the Israelis came to kill.
Oh yeah, because they had so many other methodologies. The Israeli could have just, you know, confronted us, shoot in the air, you know, sabotage the boat and get us trapped there, or even just take us all to jail. But why did they need to kind of shoot people, you know? And I think it's premeditated, you know. It cannot be just something that randomly started. We even found this little booklet. And at first, the passenger who found it, a Canadian gentleman, he's like, oh, I found the list of execution. And then when I looked at it, I was like, no, this is the ones that they should not kill. Everybody else is fine, but those you don't kill. Members of parliament from Germany, Archbishop, you know, 90-year-old Archbishop, and, you know, bestseller writer from Scandinavia, you know, the celebrities on the flotilla, you know.
Where did you find this booklet? Where was this booklet found?
When there was this whole thing with the Israeli soldiers, one of them dropped the booklet.
Lara Lee and the others were handcuffed and taken from international waters to Israel. Upon arrival, they are told to, quote, sign here, and that they will be deported because they are illegally in Israel. Shocked and taken to Israel against their will, they soon realize they were incommunicado.
They had a whole facility set up to receive us, so they already knew their plan, you know. Intimidate us, shoot if necessary, take us all to this huge facility jail, because we were hundreds and hundreds of people, you know. And that's basically that, you know. And the U.S. Embassy. I mean, I'm Brazilian and American, you know. The U.S. Embassy came. They just wanted technical information, your name, your passport number, and we mentioned what happened to us. They were like, no, this is not of interest to us, you know. And I recommend that American citizens just sign whatever the Israeli government asks you to sign. Otherwise, you'll just stay here. And here's a list of lawyers, $500 an hour, and good luck. This is the support we got
from
the U.S. Embassy. I mean, luckily, I'm also Brazilian and was totally different. I think I was probably the first one in jail to have contact with the international press, you know, because our government from Brazil, they were really concerned, you know, and the coverage they gave was totally different, to the point that I've heard that the Israeli embassy in Brazil issued a press release against me, saying I was a terrorist and tried to distribute that to all the press members in Brazil, because there was a lot of compassion from Brazil. But in the U.S., as you know, the politics here are, I mean, U.S., Israel, is like you almost have no distinction, you know. And it's really sad because it's detrimental for the American population. I mean, people here in this country, they're told, you know, that this is good partnership. It's not. We're giving billions of dollars to a government that is like apartheid government, totally despotic, you know, oppressive, occupying Palestine. It's not acceptable, you know. So this is where we have to do the work. I mean, when I got out of jail, the Brazilian government says, you want to come to Brazil? And I said, no, I'll go to the U.S. because here is where people are like completely like, you know, they don't have an understanding what the real issue is. So that's where we have to work to get people to understand what's really going on, you know.
When Lee finally returned to the United States, she vowed to show the evidence she had obtained to the world. The footage has been online for the public to view and was released at a United Nations press conference. While Lee and others have called for an independent, unbiased investigation to the attack, the situation in Gaza has more or less remained the same. Since 2007, Israel has imposed a blockade on the Gaza Strip, preventing the entry of hundreds of items. Today, more than 1.5 million Palestinians are living under a blockade.
How was your video, better to say, the evidence that you provided, the footage that you smuggled outside?
Yeah, my crew, like everybody else, was just like in the lower deck. We don't have like extreme close-ups of the extermination, you know, like of the shooting and killing happening in the upper deck. But it's just raw footage. It's just like, you know, as happened, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's very eerie because the first half hour is like just people praying, singing, yeah, sleeping, you know. It's almost like Titanic, you know, like you know something's going to happen.
Yeah.
So you feel this kind of like, oh my God, this first half hour, you know, instead of thinking it's boring, it's like eerie because you know what's going to be coming, you know. And then, bah, 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 bah. You even hear my voice saying, already? You know, because it was like, we expected them to come, but not like in the darkness, like in the middle of international waters, complete disrespect for international law, you know. So that was shocking.
And how was this footage received here inside the United States when you came back? Were you somewhat disappointed at the lack of interest, perhaps?
Oh, yeah. It was amazing. You know, all of a sudden, you have the only footage, and you would think everybody would want to see it, right? But sometimes people would run interviews, but by the time it gets to the editor or, you know, the chief staff on the, you know, the chief editor, they cut it. They're like, no, we are not broadcasting this interview. We are not showing this footage. We're, you know? So, obviously, again, we counted on the activists and the progressive radio, progressive television, and progressive media to give us the space. But, obviously, the most important is to reach the mainstream. They get brainwashed that, oh, we are violent activists, and we ask for, you know, this kind of brutality. I mean, we were just on the boat.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I was pretty surprised at the lack of attention that the video received, ultimately. What about at the United Nations? It's interesting that Israel hasn't been held accountable so far there either, isn't it?
Yeah, the United Nations, everybody came, the journalists came, all the international journalists came, and they were shocked, you know, so they did their part, but they're small, you know, they're not like... I mean, it was crazy that even BBC used our footage and just used what they thought could be pro-Israel, you know, and we protested because this is ridiculous that they would take, like, the only footage and couple it where the IDF provided footage and have this documentary, you know, on BBC. But this is mainstream media, you know, what can you expect? Luckily, you have the internet, so hundreds of thousands of people can download and, you know, and people who wanted to know and people who wanted to see had the freedom to go and download the footage. And that's what happened the first weekend.
However, the resistance continues. Activists from 25 countries plan to once again sail to the Gaza Strip in late May to mark the first anniversary of the flotilla attempt. The International Free Gaza Movement and others have vowed to continue their efforts despite a recent call by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on European states to stop the convoy from sailing.
1 year on, how has this story developed? Has Israel been held accountable?
You see, that's the thing. The total impunity of the Israeli government is amazing. It's like complete, like, you know, disrespect for international law. It's almost like, what is international law? They don't care, you know. But we activists or humanitarian aid workers, volunteers for justice and peace, we're all going to go back again. I mean, I'm not going to be physically on the boat, but I'm supporting, you know. So we have many ships going again 1 year later.
You know, it's interesting. Benjamin Netanyahu has warned European states to tell your governments that this ship cannot leave dock. Basically, 25 countries want to once again sail their boats to the Gaza Strip. What do you make of that? Do you think that it's a dangerous move on the part of the activists that want to go?
It's always dangerous, you know, and I think it just shows how far you are ready to commit, even sometimes your life, for the justice cause, you know. And I think we always knew that we could get injured and so forth when we were on the last one. But to just come in extermination style, that was not expected. They did an autopsy. Like, there was even an article, The Guardian. They said, you know, when they analyzed the people that got shot, it was like, you know, close range. It was execution style. And it's just amazing the courage of people, you know, that devote their lives to peace and justice, despite the fact that maybe the Israelis will do the same again. People will still go, you know, and confront.
You talk about people devoting their life to peace and justice. For you as an activist and as a director, why is the Gaza Strip and the Palestinian cause so significant? Like you said, you come from a Brazilian background, you're a U.S. citizen. Why would you do that? Why would you put yourself in that situation?
It's like almost like the ultimate injustice case. How can they just, you know, start these settlements and take people's identity, kick them out, don't give them the right to return, you know? They have this wall, bigger, larger, taller than the Berlin Wall. I mean, this is like the apartheid system, you know? It's like, you have your house as a Palestinian and you have your olive trees and then they come and put this wall, you know? You cannot even harvest your olive trees. I mean, people, the humiliation, you know? Like in my film, there's this little shot where people are just with their bicycle, you know, and the Israeli soldier needs to see everything in the grocery bag. I mean, the daily humiliation, you know, and also how apathetic the whole world is, you know. When they deported me, like, I had all the circumstances in events in my life where I tried to enter Palestine, and they deported me, they put me in jail. And what I think is interesting is that the other governments, they obey Israel. If they put me on an Alitalia plane and say, you're transporting a terrorist, keep her passport, all the pilots and stewards, they would be like, oh. Mm. I'm like, you buy into this? No, they obey. You know, I arrive in Tunisia, and they say, what happened? We have no problem with Israel. I'm like, wow, you Tunisian government, come to me and say you have no problem with Israeli government.
While there has been international outcry and resistance to support the Palestinians, in recent years, Palestinians themselves have found their voice through cultural means. In her new movie, Culture of Resistance, Lara Lee dedicates a segment to the Palestinian struggle for justice in a way seldom heard of.
السلام اللي هن طالبينه غير السلام اللي نحن ناطرينه. هيدا النقطه اللي بنختلف عليها دائما. وهي هيدي صارت انه مثل بروباغندا عن اتفاق دول ضد منظمه انعملي او ارض عم يتخانقوا عليها كل الاديان انه هيدي هي صعبه يعني انه الا بدايه النهايه رح تكون هي نهايه العالم انه انا بالنسبه لي
You see, we civilians, we don't have weapons, we don't have drones, we don't have, you know, cluster bombs. And so what do we have? We have music, film, photography, dance. We have to be creative. We have to create flotillas. We have to, you know, create dance and music. And that's what we do. And as Gandhi said, you know, be the change you want to see. You want to provoke change, you act, you know, in your small way. Sometimes you cannot be an activist 24/7. You have to put food on the table. You have to have a regular life. But do something rather than nothing, you know. Like, everybody can contribute on the weekend, in the evening, when you take your vacation, through expressions, artistic expression. And that's basically a celebration of people's power and creativity. That's what we try to do with the Cultures of Resistance film.
However, the film covers a wider spectrum, a global resistance for peace and justice. It was in 2003, on the eve of the Iraq War, when Lara Lee embarked on a journey to better understand a world increasingly embroiled in conflict, and as she saw it, heading for self-destruction. After several years traveling over five continents, Lee encountered growing numbers of people who committed their lives to promoting change. While the journey ends in a Palestinian refugee camp in Lebanon, where photography, music, and film have given a voice to those rarely heard, it also takes us to places like Burma and Brazil, exploring how art and creativity can be ammunition in the battle for peace and justice.
We shot in many countries around the world, Middle East, South, Africa, South America. So it's like a quilt editing mosaic that gives you a little bit of an overview of some of the conflicts and how we are united by our suffering and why we need global solidarity, because it's not just like Palestinians caring about their Palestinian problem or the Congolese about Congo, you know, we should all work together. And the flotilla was also a great example, you know, why... Mm-hmm. When Israel killed 9 people, it became like a world uproar, you know? And when they killed 1,400 Gaza people during Operation Caslet, the world didn't care, you know? It just shows that if you have many nationalities involved and it's like this global international solidarity, it has a lot more impact. So I really urge people to work together and, you know, uprise, change, bring down governments that are despotic, and power to the people.
Great. Lara Lee, thank you so much for joining us on The Autograph, and we're looking forward to seeing more of your documentary, Culture of Resistance.
Thank you.
And once again, it's time to say goodbye. Thank you for staying with us and watching. Remember, you can always send us your emails to theautograph@susanmadaris.com. We're always looking forward to them. Until next week, and another show from all of us here in New York City. Goodbye.